We'd like to welcome everyone to this morning's study session for the May City Council for Thursday, May 12th, 2011. We'll begin today's meeting with a review of the agenda for next Monday's council meeting. Okay, is everyone loaded?
Loaded.
Locked in, loaded?
Ready for bed.
Councilmember Richens?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Items 3A through 4B. 5A through 5F. 5G through 5J.
I think there's something in here he doesn't want us to see.
Okay. 5K through 6F. We're going to come back later on items 6C through 6, I guess through 6F related to DMB. We'll come back after this. 7A through 8A, Councilmember Glover.
I was just wondering, what sign in the community would be comparative to this one? And John, you can probably answer that one.
Which one are we talking about?
What's for the sign that's going to be built?
7B.
Oh, sorry, I apologize. Okay. For 7B, comparable. Would it be like the one at Riverview, or?
That would be fairly close, Councilmember Glover. Those, I think, are about the same height. This is a 65-foot tall sign. It's going to be shorter than the one at Fiesta, because that one's up closer to 95 or 100 feet.
Okay.
Councilmember Kavanaugh?
And just a question. I know this is for introduction, so I'll be voting for it for introduction, but I have concerns about it for when we have the final vote on June 6th on this sign. Thank you.
Councilmember Higgins?
And. What was the main driver behind this? Why? I mean, this is for the center that's been there for what, 10, 12, 14 years?
Yes, Mayor, Councilmember Higgins, property owners is looking for a little bit more visibility along the freeway for the center. You can't really see it from the freeway. See the north edge where the theater is, but that's all they have signed currently is the theater itself. And so they'd like that little bit more visibility for the center, particularly for the eastbound traffic that really can't see it till they get past there.
No, but there's no special like topography or like at Fiesta Mall where it's buried, the mall's buried underneath a big berm. ADOT didn't do anything new to this area since it was built up where it would change the visibility.
Right. Councilman Rickens, okay. No, there's been no change in that regard.
Okay.
But again, coming for the eastbound traffic because of the overpass, they don't have much visibility.
Okay. Thank you.
Councilman Kavanaugh?
And just to follow up to that, I was on the council that approved the original design for this, and it was sold to the council by having the big visibility with the theater being placed on that edge and the big signs on it. So, again, that's why I have concern. I, quite frankly, don't see the need for this site that is well-established and well-located and doesn't meet several of the guidelines that we have for freeway landmark monument signs, which is why on the 6th I'll be voting against it, but I won't oppose this introduction on Monday.
Who are the tenants there? Isn't it a big Walmart?
If you don't know, they need a sign.
That's
the issue.
I'll admit it's kind of
taken.
It's a softball question.
Yes,
it's a Walmart.
There is a Walmart on the south end.
Okay.
And a variety of other shops between.
Well, I think probably one of the challenges is all is, that, let's put it this way, there's not as many tenants today as there were a year ago. The center is... I don't know how distress isn't the right word, but let's just say it's
struggling.
I don't even know if struggling. It's definitely not as vibrant as it was.
I mean, there's a business they're doing okay.
Yeah, but like
there's a lot of vacant square footage.
There's
back
a lot
there.
Of vacant,
especially back in that corner.
Ultima Electronics has gone out. The restaurant that used
El
to
Paso.
Be there, El Paso, all those, and some of the restaurants have shut down. So it definitely is not as vibrant as it was a year, two, three, 4 years ago. So, and obviously people don't know it's there.
Oh, I know it's there.
Oh, okay. All right. Anything else on that? Okay, anything else on that page? 8B through 11A. Yeah, Councilman Fenter.
Sorry, on 8A.
8A, back to page 6.
Yeah, I was lost track there.
I met with city staff and had some concerns on the review, but they've come up with a reasonable plan. One thing I hope we look at, especially in these far east areas in the future, is response times. We have a normal review by police and fire, but those have always been on the prevention side of things. And, you know, they look at systems and processes. Response times, I think, are a big deal, and operations should really look at those. So I've asked for that through the staff, and they're very willing. But it's definitely something I'll be watching for in the future, because those puts pressure on the services and, you know, building fire stations and other things. So, these folks have been going through this for 3 years. I think it'd be really unfair to pull the rug out from under them right now. So maybe for future consideration on the response times.
That's it. Okay, thank you. 8B through 11A, Councilmember Higgins.
Item 10A, Mayor. I had a hard time. Is it 10A? Or no, 10B, sorry.
10B.
I'm sorry. I'm good. I found the answer.
Mr. Brady, you want to explain that very quickly?
Sure. Back in 2008, the council approved. Well, first of all, this is regarding the Mesa Town Center. We have an improvement district there where tax is levied on the properties within that area to support the Downtown Management Association and the maintenance and care of the downtown. Back in 2008, that assessment, there was an assessment approved for a 3% rate increase for the next 4 years. However, recognizing the challenging times with the reduced reduced business activity and the economy, the Downtown Mesa Association Board has voted to reduce the 2011-12 assessment, which council will approve, by 3%. So they've agreed to or recommending an assessment that would actually reduce the amount that was already on the books or being proposed by 3%. So that's what they're recommending to the council for this coming year.
Okay. All right. Anything else? Thank you. We're going to go back now and talk about the items that are 6C through 6F, which relates to Mesa Proving Grounds, DMB, and the First Solar, and amendments to those development agreements. So, Mr. Rigby.
Good morning, Mayor. Perfect. Good morning, Mayor, members of the council. Scott Rigby here with John Wesley, our planning director. And we want to take a few minutes and talk a little about the First Solar and DMB project. This has been a project that has been in the works for probably going on 3 years. And you probably ask, why 3 years? And really, the First Solar and the DMB discussion has been going on for probably about 8 months. But I really want to take a step back to 2007, 2008. And address how we got to this point and how we were able to attract a user like this to the Gateway area. This picture you see here is the Gateway area, largely bounded by Elliott on the north, Germain to the south, and Meridian to the east, and Power Road to the west. Several years ago, way back, I guess in the early 90s, the city decided that it was important to protect the airport to make sure it could get off the ground and get going. And the city developed a zoning process and a land use process that said basically everything south of the power lines would be set for the initial time to focus on industrial and business development in order to allow that airport to begin to develop and get off its knees and get growing. I think today you would see the success of that out there with 1 million passengers and 100,000 passengers in March alone, our most successful month to date. But you see, one of the challenges that council recognized back then is you had this very structured zoning where if you didn't have the right corner, you couldn't potentially get that user that you thought would be excellent for your corner. And so the direction of the council and city manager was to look at different ways of how we could address protecting the airport, promoting jobs, and becoming a fiscally sustainable area instead of just doing general industrial development. In that process, the Mesa Gateway Strategic Plan, we identify key economic development scorecard items. And I won't go through these, but you can see we've been very successful in the aerospace and airline services. High tech fits in with the First Solar discussion. We're doing great on healthcare and the medical actions going up and down the Power Road Knowledge Corridor. So we've been very successful in that aspect, and largely has to do with what we've been able to set up in the Gateway area. I wanted to include this slide. This is from the 2008 final report we did to Planning and Zoning into Council that talked about the challenge that the team laid out in the Mesa Gateway Strategic Plan, which is to protect the airport, to bring high-wage, high-quality jobs. And as I went back and looked at this a month ago, I happened to realize what's down in the left-hand corner is one of the type of companies we thought would be a perfect fit to come into the Gateway area, which is a picture of the First Solar headquarters in Tempe at that time. And it was it's visionary, I know. It was to focus on high-tech companies that focus on environmental sustainability, that bring high-wage, high-value jobs to the area. I thought it was interesting to point that out. At the end of that process, the mayor was involved in this process, is getting away from figuring out whether red goes on this corner or blue goes on this corner. It was to develop four areas or themes of the types of development we wanted to see in different areas. And so you see the different districts that we came up with. The area that First Solar and DMB are involved is the mixed-use community district, which is up in the northeast quadrant. Each of these districts have distinct characteristics of the type of development and integration we want to see. And the goal is to create that airport city vibrance that brings appropriate residential urban lifestyles with commercial that helps develop that airport and helps develop the overall area. And DMB, and I'm going to transfer it off to John here in a second, really grasped upon the notion that we wanted to build flexibility into the city's process in order to address the changing market dynamics and to address the opportunity to bring high-quality tenants to that. With that.
Mayor, Council, good morning. Another part of that overall planning process for this area, and we knew that as it would grow, we would bring in the jobs, would bring in the people living there. It was also a transportation planning process. We know that the street network out there is going to need to grow and expand as the population grows and expands. And so we've just got a couple of shots here of Signal Butte further to the north, where it's already developed out in those three lanes in each direction type of pattern, and that's what we expect to see throughout this area. Today, they aren't there, but there's work going, expansions being made, and they'll continue to grow in that way also to carry the traffic and development that occurs. So that was also, again, part of that planning process, looking forward to being prepared for the growth and development and being flexible as we do so. As Scott mentioned, as we went through this process, we tried to look for ways to be more flexible and creative to allow better response to market demands. One of the things that we created in that process is the mixed-use community land use designation, which has now been applied to a couple of the properties out in that area. And so instead of seeing the patchwork of different colors trying to anticipate what would go on what corner, we now have this more flexible mixed-use community. And so you see basically one color out there on what was the GM proving grounds to allow for that. Consistent with that, then, DMB has applied for and received zoning approval for the planned community district on their portion of the GM proving grounds, and along with that, a community plan. As we did that, again, we've got one color on the map, but the plan documents that support that include some of the same things we were already looking for and the goals from the strategic development plan are protecting the overflight area, putting uses generally where they would need to be to help the area grow in a holistic way. So along that Elliott Road corridor, you see those patterns there of no single-family residential, but looking for some of those open space and employment-type uses in that particular location. The community plan also has nine development units that it establishes on the property. So these development units help develop the overall vision and guidelines and standards for the property by giving us the opportunity to take these kind of high-level standards and guidelines and look at specific areas of the development as they're ready to develop and see how we can translate those into more specific types of development. So along with that, there's a land use budget that was established with the plan. that sets overall maximum amounts for future development in the area, 15,000 dwelling units, 20 million square feet in non-residential land use. That's divided in a chart in the community plan amongst the different development units with minimums and maximums that could occur. But then we also have the flexibility of transfers between the various districts. So again, we can respond as needs might change, but within the confines of the overall direction and goals of the plan. So currently, we've been looking at development unit 6. It's that northeast corner of the overall development. That's the one that the first solar is going into. And so just generally, that particular development unit, the lower 500 acres, has the range of dwelling units, commercial development. It primarily planned, or one of the major land use groups that can go there is the regional campus land use group, and you can see the types of uses that are anticipated for that particular area. So the Planning and Zoning Board has considered and taken action on the three items needed to move these processes forward. Basically, again, when we approve the community plan, it sets the overall development. Nothing can actually develop until we approve a development unit plan and the individual site plans. So in addition to that, though, in this particular case, because of the intensity of development, they had to do a budget transfer. So you can see the amount of intensity that was removed from development units 1 and 9 and shifted over to this development unit to give them enough square footage for the particular facilities. Leave a little bit left over for additional parts of development unit 6. Another action that we took with regard to this is to divide development unit 6 into two pieces, development unit north and south, because they were focusing on and just ready for consideration of a portion of the property right now. So we're really talking about development unit 6N, as shown on this map. And as we focus in a little closer, you can see the size up in the corner, a little over 2,000 square feet east and 2,000 feet east and west, and 4,000 north south. The process then included the next step that the Planning and Zoning Board considered was approval of the development unit plan for this area. Through that, we get more specific about what land use groups are going where. Again, the primary land use group being planned is land use group C, the regional campus. We looked at a few other things as a part of that document, one of which, go ahead, is what some of the landscape standards might be. And so they set up a general pattern for that that then gets translated into the specific site plan. We also looked at some of the transportation issues and needs in the area and refined the transportation plan for the property, look where signals could go and how things might circulate. So that was the second item reviewed by the Planning and Zoning Board and approved by them on April the 28th. The last item has been the actual site plan for the property. This just focuses on the north half of Development Unit 6N at this time. And we've really only approved the eastern half of this, but they've shown the western half of how the Fab 2 might come in. So we've seen those and looked at and approved Fab 1. Some of the details we see with that, again, are looking at the specifics of the landscaping and how it's going to work. We've got a big building, a big box building, and the landscape concept here was to really let the landscape be a little bit more intense and provide some of that articulation for the building, and the building really becomes a backdrop to that landscaping. Pretty dense landscaping along the rights-of-way, so that we'll pretty effectively screen the building, and then a pretty dramatic entry on the main employee entry to the site. And then this last slide that I'll put in for my discussion has to do with the traffic patterns. Look at it a little bit closer. I know it was some issue and interest to the council. It has been to the neighbors. Basically, the way the site functions is that the employees will come in and out that northern driveway along Signal Butte and go into the parking lots from there. There's a secure gate at that point. All employees, once they get to the site, will be coming into the building from the east side through the main entries there. All the truck traffic comes a little bit further south on Signal Butte, comes past the building to a driveway that's on the south side of the building. They come in, and you see to the south side of the building a little parking area towards the back corner of the building, but still on the south side. Trucks will stop there and stage there. This is a little over 800 feet west of Signal Butte, so we know all the trucks can get off the street. While they're sitting there, they're fairly well screened from the landscaping, the solar arrays, and the detention facility. They check in with the security at the southwest corner of the site. They determine where they need to go and open the gates. Right now, it'll obviously be to Fab 1. In the future, they'll be deciding if they're going to Fab 2, Fab 3, Fab 4 as the site continues to expand. So it's an important staging area for them as they get direction on where to go. Once they're led into the site, they come in and they go north along the back side of the building. There's a secondary staging area for them to stop at until then they're ready to go to the docks, either load or unload. All those operations then take place behind the building where they're well screened from the surrounding.
Hey, John, you said the back side of the building. You're talking about the west side of the building.
West side, yes, okay. Thank you. So that'll be in the space between the two buildings when there when there's more than one. And then when they're done, they come back out south and then east to Signal Butte. There's a signal there and can go back up and get on the freeway and go wherever they need to go. There's some thought, would it be better to have them come in off of Elliott Road in order to avoid some of that conflict maybe with the residential to the east. With overall staging practices that they need and the way their site is laid out where the security gate is, that becomes impractical for them. The signal spacing to put signal in that location on Elliott doesn't work very well with the timing and so forth. So we've discussed this in a little bit more detail with them, and this seems to be the best way.
How does the signal on Signal Butte and Elliott, isn't most of the traffic going to be coming in from the west?
Yes, it should be coming
so
that way.
Would it be right turn? If they came in off Elliott, wouldn't it be right
it's
turn?
It's mostly as they leave, the exiting trucks.
Oh, when they leave.
Need to make that left turn to get back onto Elliott.
So left turn out of, if they were to exit out of the north side, they'd be turning west onto Elliott, so that'd
correct.
Be a left turn. Okay.
Correct.
And but either way, isn't this Signal Butte layout or this entrance going to be a temporary one? I guess I'm not understanding because I thought that eventually when Fab 2 is built and they have the west access road, that's going to be the primary access for truck traffic, correct?
Yes, Mayor, that will become the primary eventually when they have that opportunity. It doesn't mean it will all come in that way. Some could still come in off of Signal Butte and there could still be some exiting that way.
So if Fab 2 is built, then that west access road is built.
Right.
And then truck traffic doesn't come in on Signal Butte anymore.
Correct, but it still all comes to that central staging point that's
right,
being established currently.
But it gets to the central staging from the west
correct.
Through the back side on the south side of Fab 2 after exiting Elliott and coming back. Now, I'm assuming there will be a light there at that western access road.
Yes.
Okay, so that's how you take care of the outbound traffic that's turned off that. So that eventually that will be the permanent truck access is on that western access road. Then they'll come around on the south side and then come to the staging area on the south side of the buildings, right?
Well, Mayor, let's be careful because I don't want to I'm uncomfortable because I understand that the western collector that will certainly take a lot of truck traffic, but I don't think anybody's suggesting
it's all of it.
That
correct.
All of that. There will
be
still
the primary.
Because you're now doubling the well, I don't know if it's doubling.
Right. Well, I guess what I'm trying to ask is what is the long term plan?
Well, and then the long term plan
does this stay open and that just becomes secondary access?
No, it's still an active as I understand it,
okay,
it's still
that's
an
what
active
I'm trying to get to.
Yeah. I don't want to create an expectation that once we get the western collector, that materially changes. I don't think it does. I think it just takes more capacity. Remember, I think all of this is being planned ultimately also for the next two fabs, 3 and 4. And I think the way we've looked at Signal Butte, I think that's one of the reasons we showed the pictures up front, is Signal Butte is a major arterial in the city of Mesa.
Okay.
That's the plan. So it would handle not just this truck traffic, but maybe Alan needs to step up and tell us, you know, the arterials, the right-of-way, and the plan for arterials is to handle eventually how much traffic down the road, whether it's these trucks or just traffic
in general.
Well, let
me ask you this. Are we to assume that this is going to be a lighted intersection? Because how does this fit in or this intersection right here on the south side?
Mayor, council members, to address Chris's comment about the arterial streets, the traffic modeling done by the DMB study projects at full build-out DMB development in the area, they're looking in the neighborhood of 50,000 vehicles a day on this section of Signal Butte. And as you recall, because the DMB development is 2 miles wide and they've basically taken out Chrisman as a major arterial street, that tends to shift the traffic that isn't destined into or out of the DMB area, it tends to shift more to Ellsworth and Signal Butte. So
yeah, the idea is that those who would use the internal
exactly.
streets of Mesa Proving Grounds would be basically local traffic.
Exactly.
And
so,
that the flow-through traffic would go to Ellsworth and Signal Butte.
Exactly. That's exactly
and
right.
And remember, at Signal Butte, is there a, eventually there will be a an exit or an interchange at
State Route 24.
At the Williams Gateway freeway down
correct.
Just
yeah.
south.
Yes. Right.
There'll be a ramp there.
Right.
Right. So that's going to funnel traffic onto there going both ways.
Right. And I think as much traffic they'll be coming off the 202, I mean, it's a pretty straight shot from the 60 down Signal Butte to this location also.
Right.
Right. No, I'm just long term. I mean, and that's the Gateway Freeway is not that far away. It's going to be at Ellsworth in a couple, 3 years.
Right.
And then the extension could come through not long after. So in the next 10 years, there's a possibility there could be
Well, just this intersection from the 60, the current 202, and the new 24.
And the new 24, yeah.
It's a pretty easy drive to either one.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to get at, is that long term, this is not a dead end like it is now. This is not going to be a cul-de-sac.
Pretty intense.
This is going to be, and it's going to head south of here also into the Pacific Proving property, down actually into Queen Creek.
Exactly. So you'll have good access from all directions, which is really preferred rather than concentrating all the traffic in and out one direction.
Right.
As far as this truck driveway and future signalization, with Fab 1 and the volumes we're talking about on both the truck driveway and Signal Butte, there's really not going to be a need for a signal there. But I have carefully reviewed the location of that driveway and the location of existing Reuben Street, which is the neighborhood collector going to the east off of Signal Butte. I anticipate eventually Reuben Street would need a signal, and if the truck access eventually needs a signal, we can signalize both the truck access and Reuben Street serving the development to the east. I'm very comfortable with being able to do that should the need arise.
Okay. Because Reuben dead ends, because it goes right into the, that's it at the very, very bottom of the site plan. Basically goes into the substation right there, right? Is that Reuben right there?
Right. It would be it's a T-intersection now. I would anticipate it'd still be a T-intersection because it serves the neighborhood to the east, but it wouldn't go serve the
site.
The first solar site.
Okay.
Okay, so we can move on. We'll go ahead and move on to the rest of the presentation, just covering the agreement itself.
Okay, so the next step is to actually discuss the First Solar Development Agreement. This is a process that started way back in the fall of 2010. We started discussions with them, engaged in some significant due diligence with them over the holidays, and we appreciate our business partners who have helped us out in that process. Just a quick note, First Solar is the largest manufacturer of thin film PV solar modules. And the interesting thing is, from the point of that ignit that goes into the facility to a finished PV panel is about 2.5 hours. So it's a very highly automated process that they go through. The plan is for First Solar to construct their initial Fab 1, which is the one we were just showing up on the screen, about 1.3 million square feet. It'll have initially 4 production lines with the ability to expand up to 10 within that same fab. The initial employment will be about 600 employees, an average salary about $48,000. That phase one, which is not only Fab 1, but also potential Fab 2, direct to the west, includes 130 acres and accommodate that second similar size 1.3 million square foot fab. They also have an option with DMB to purchase an additional 130 acres to the south for 2 additional similar fabs. At-risk grading has started. If you're out there, you will see significant amounts of dirt moving back and forth.
Define at-risk so those not in the development business understand what at-risk means.
At-risk means that if for some reason this deal falls through, then there's no consequence back to the city. They'll be told that they need to stop, and that's their risk.
So the developer's doing this without final approvals, knowing that they're at risk in case things happen. Okay.
And Mayor, while we're talking about at-risk permits, I believe it's the applicant's intent also to pull vertical at-risk permits as well. You want to explain those?
Correct. That would they're looking to get their actual building permits Tuesday next week, following the council action on Monday. And so there's still an appeal period that runs through Wednesday with regard to the action by the Planning and Zoning Board. So those permits will be at risk in case that any appeals are submitted.
Okay, Councilman Richens?
If they were to go vertical and not be able to complete the deal, what protects us from looking at something similar to what's by Chandler Mall right now? You got a 7-story structure there with cement and rebar hanging at it. Is there any requirement for them to take down anything that they've gone vertical with, and how do they do that financially?
That would certainly be the worst case scenario. The way we're structuring this at risk, and this is a unique opportunity for us to develop new processes. First Solar will actually sign a letter. We're still working that out. I don't have that for you today, that they absolutely accept the risk. If they left a partially constructed building, it would be a violation of our code, and if it was there for some period of time, basically we would work with them to ask them to remove it.
But speaking realistically, though, the timing on this, they're not going to go. They may go vertical, but they're going to mainly go down before they go up.
Right.
The timing is all of our actions and the actionable time periods are going to pass or expire well before they start actually going up.
Right. The discussions that we've had of what they're going to actually construct at risk, and you know, feel free to come up and correct me if I'm wrong, will be underground utilities, trenching, that kind of thing, putting the subgrade utility infrastructure in. Again, within that appeal period, we would anticipate before they ever start going up above grade that appeal period.
And Christine,
would
the appeal period, let's just be more practical. The appeal period, as far as knowing the outcome of the action of council, would be that the latest would be when?
June 15th.
June 15th.
And so that would be the appeal of the development agreement. We also potentially have appeals of the P&Z actions.
But that expires sooner than that.
Yes.
So the point is that if they pull the vertical permits, May
17th is what we're anticipating.
That it's They're really how there. Much work can you do in yeah. less than 30 days is really what we're talking about.
Okay.
And a lot of that is necessitated because of the next bullet point, which is they want that building complete and ready for tooling December 31st of this year. So at full build out of all four fabs, employment may eclipse that 4,000 figure. Mesa has worked with them and has agreed to construct the following public improvements, including the 24-inch sewer line that will go from Signal Butte to Ellsworth. We'll work with them on water connections. We will acquire the necessary right-of-way and construct Signal Butte and Elliott Hash Street improvements adjacent to Fab 1. And future room improvements will be tied to each respective fab as they come online. We'll assist them with the foreign trade zone designation request from the feds. And we'll also work
with let me ask you something. Headed west on Elliott, I mean, I know that is right now is basically two lanes. I guess we'll monitor that traffic, because I think what I'm concerned with is, depending upon DMV schedule, and we don't know what that really is, I guess if you look at First Solar being wildly successful, which nobody would complain about, except for it seems like it would then put a strain on the portion of Elliott Road between Ellsworth and Signal Butte. We have potential or plans to take care of that, or DMB, or how do you anticipate that playing out, potentially?
Mayor Smith, let me just address the traffic perspective. There's really nothing between Signal Butte and Ellsworth to impede the traffic. And a single traffic lane without any intersections, traffic signals can carry close to 1,800 vehicles an hour. So if First Solar and I was going to say points to the east, but points to the east are pretty well developed already. Can put a lot more traffic that two-lane section of Elliott can handle. The constraints are really the intersections. Both the intersections at Elliott and Ellsworth, that's been widened for the most part with the development project on the northeast corner, and it's got four lanes or six, I think it's four lanes. Anyway, multiple lanes.
So the intersection of Elliott and Ellsworth,
and we're taking care of Signal Butte and Elliott right now.
That's going to be taken care of.
West underway right now.
Yes.
So the points in between, what you're saying is, as long as there's no development in there, your calculations show it should be able to easily handle the traffic on a straight shot.
Yes.
Since there's no, now if there is development in there, well then the street will be widened.
Exactly.
So when development occurs, the street will be widened. Until development occurs, you don't anticipate there being a traffic issue because there's no stop between them.
Right. It's
and there's nothing to add traffic between.
Correct.
Between the gate and Ellsworth, basically.
Correct.
Okay. Vice Mayor.
I guess of all the things that present a neighborhood concern that we can have any substantive effect on, it would be the traffic. So there's no constriction in traffic. The roadways can handle the traffic is what you're telling me in simplest terms. Would you go over again for me why making some changes here, maybe on the city's part, can't move more of that traffic onto Elliott Road and have staging on Elliott Road rather than putting it on Signal Butte where the housing is?
I think
that and perhaps go over this one more time and point out on the looking at the Fab 1, where is the initial staging for that truck traffic?
Do we have a map that we can put on the Elmo?
That would be nice to be able to point.
You're asking because you want them to explain because you don't know.
Let me check this.
That has the numbers.
I need this. I have to push. Are you going to change it?
Okay.
The light doesn't matter. Okay.
That's okay. We can see it.
I'd just like to introduce Mark Beck. He's here representing First Solar, so I think he can help answer the traffic question. So, Mark, come on up.
Mayor, members of the council, my name is Nick Wood. I'm with Snell and Wilmer. I'm the zoning attorney representing First Solar in this project. A little bit of background. We have been reaching out to the neighborhood to the east, knocked on 1,200 homes. We've delivered 500 individual letters of support from the people east of this area. There's 10 people who showed up at P&Z in opposition. One of the things they raised was the traffic. Before I turn over on the technical side, I just want to point out a couple of things. The truck entrance that's located here is not across the street from any homes. The nearest home is to the south. Of course, there won't be any truck traffic turning right and going south. The nearest home is 500 feet from the truck entrance. That's almost 2 football fields away. Across the street, directly east of Fab 1, is a finished lot subdivision that is owned by a home builder. We have visited with Standard Pacific. They're very much in support of this. They don't see truck traffic passing their new homes as being an impediment to anything. We may have 50 trucks a day from Fab 1 that will go up and down Signal Butte, but again, it's a major arterial with 6 lanes essentially at build out. Yeah. And nothing will go south near the homes of the people, again, the small group of people who have complained about this. But from the standpoint of how this circulation came to be, and I think City Manager Mr. Brady is correct. Once the second Fab is built, much of the traffic will come in off of Elliott, but Signal Butte will still be another access point, but there won't be any trucks that will go south of this truck entrance. There'll basically be 2 entrances in and out of all 4 Fabs. One will be the new one off of Elliott, which will be built west of Fab 2, and then when Fab 3 and 4 are built, this truck entrance right here will be the only one that will be used. There will not be another one to the south. So the existing home subdivision that is south of this site will not be any more impacted by trucks crossing, their backyards or near their subdivision. So
what? For point of scale on this, on the bottom corner, there's that small substation. Directly across the street, there's actually a street that goes off toward the east. For an idea of scale, what street is that? Is that a street into a subdivision, or is that... That's not an arterial. Just so I get an idea of how far south this is.
Mayor and Vice Mayor, that's Reuben Street. That's the collector street that goes into the neighborhood and serves the neighborhood to the east.
Alan, is there any way... Can someone pull up John's slide that has the aerial of that site? Specifically, it says DU6N. That aerial that shows the site and then shows the neighborhood to the east.
Better yet, I'm trying to load up Google Maps.
That's I was going to do this.
But that slide is a pretty good one, John. The one you had in your PowerPoint,
right? Is it before this one, Chris?
Yeah, it's got to come back up on the screen, though. There we go. Okay.
There you go.
There you go.
That one.
That is where the truck entrance is?
I'm sorry, where?
Okay, yeah, so that's it. Yeah, so make sure that that's...
And you can see that the truck entrance is right here. It's right across from this green area. And you can see how where the homes are to the south. And of course, I'm sorry.
Is it close to that, where that cul-de-sac ends on the other side? Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
That we're suggesting?
Council,
do you see that cul-de-sac on the east side?
Yeah.
Here's a cul-de-sac. This is a green area, and the truck entrance is right here.
That makes sense.
Okay. It's about 400 feet or so north of Reuben.
Is the...
Okay.
Holds that picture. That's underneath. I mean, are there houses to the east, north of that road at this point, or is it still dirt?
There are no... I took some pictures the other day. There are some houses from about this point east along Elliott. In this area from Elliott south, there's no houses. Area, there's a house over kind of on this corner. There's one down here. There aren't any houses up against Signal Butte in this area until you get down south of Reuben.
Okay. And are they occupied, or are those models? Because usually when
I believe they're occupied. They appear to be occupied.
All right.
I've got some, I don't know if we have a USB port, but I had some pictures of the neighborhood.
Yeah. Great. Okay. So, and maybe, let's just talk again, maybe show the flow of the truck. Right.
So if we can switch
truck
back
traffic
to the
site. Yeah, we're making you guys go multimedia here.
There it goes. Okay, so again, truck traffic coming down Signal Butte to the entry access drive, and the initial staging area is back to the west near the southwest corner of the FAB, and that's approximately 800 feet west of Signal Butte, so there's pretty good distance back here. The guard shack is located at this location, again, southwest corner of the FAB itself. So the trucks would be stopped here, check in with the guardhouse and get their direction on where to go from there. When they're ready, they can open the gate and they drive through their secondary staging areas to the west side of the of FAB 1, where they stage until they're ready to move to the loading docks in this location and either deliver or receive. And then when they're done, they exit and come back out to, in this case, Signal Butte and exit.
I guess it just keeps coming back to the same old question, is why we can't help facilitate more of that traffic onto Elliott Road right now. Is that distance also not long enough between where the western access road would be and the Signal Butte intersection? Could we not put a traffic light there to help facilitate a left turn? Is there not
One of
distance
the
enough?
Balancing concerns through the site planning process was moving all of that site development up to the north so that you minimize the impact of those drives as you go further south along Signal Butte. So we really pinch that area along Elliott that doesn't give you that depth of staging, and you run the potential of starting to queue vehicles back onto Elliott Road. You don't, as we pushed everything north to get this truck access north of Reuben Street, we really started to constrain the width at this point. Anything that we might do really starts to create a choke point here that you don't get the depth of queuing.
I'm sorry, you're pointing to something I can't see.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's all right.
Thank you.
So as we push the truck entrance north, which is here, in order to get it north of Reuben Street to minimize the
impact. I'm sorry, I was talking about north up along Elliott.
As we push that, we actually constrain this distance or this setback from Elliott Road. So this distance was minimized in order to move these drives further north, minimizing the impact on
I think the question is, I think the question is, what between FAB 1 and FAB 2, not knowing what the timing is, and you don't even know what really the timing is for FAB 2, because that's going to be, as we understand, driven by market demand and your ability to do that. What's going to be the temporary screening, fencing, or whatever on the west side of Fab 1? Chain link? And what's going to be the back side? What are you going to build on the back side of Fab 1, on the west side of Fab 1, that's going to provide temporary? And it's going to be temporary because eventually we're assuming you're going to build Fab 2. So there's going to be asphalt or something, and you're going to have a fence. I'm assuming that that's not going to be wide open. Is that fence going to go clear to the property line? Because you now own the property for both Fab 1 and Fab 2. Phase 1 includes Fab 1 and Fab 2. So is your fencing going to be built along the western boundary of Phase 1, which would make it along the western boundary of Fab 2?
Mayor, it's this line right here is that temporary fence line.
That you're going to build a temporary fence there. Okay, so you're going to leave the Fab 2 property open. You're not going to fence off the Fab 2 property portion of Phase 1.
That's right.
Am I hearing you correctly?
Yes.
Okay, so I guess the question is, and not trying to site plan your property, but I think if I'm hearing what the Vice Mayor's saying, what keeps you from moving that fence out another 30 feet, since it's temporary, and building an asphalt strip along the west side of Fab 1 with a temporary entrance and exit off of Elliott, so that you're not, and we get it that long term, when you get Fab 3 and 4, and when Signal Butte's all to six lanes, that there's going to be a truck entry. I guess the question is, what keeps you from having the temporary entrance to the west of Fab 1? You're just going to move that fence another 20, 30 feet to the west. That's something I'd like you to, I think the Vice Mayor's talking
Thank
about.
Thank you. Yeah, that's
okay.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Councilmember Higgins.
Just on that same point, though, the road's not built out, right? Eventually, we're going to have six lanes. Is that going to be a median street, more than likely? I'm guessing. Wouldn't it be better for people that are thinking about building in this neighborhood to see that there's truck traffic out there?
Well, I think that's what they're trying to make, yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
I would rather see it on a regular basis than, oh, we're moving it, and then, oh, you bought your house, and now we're going to run it down your street. I think it'd be more open and transparent. If that's the route we're going to use, let's start using it. That's my opinion on that.
And Mayor and Council, we talked about this as an option to look at what could we do, even if it were a temporary entryway there between the two buildings coming off Elliott. And let's just talk about, because the concern I think we had was we can put down the asphalt. That's not the concern.
The issue.
There was other facilities. I think there was other concerns. What were those that we made, if we made that choice today, we were talking about what we'd be signalizing. You know, the thing we were talking about, I think, was one, the stacking of trucks on Elliott that are making that turn. We've avoided that by having the deeper entrance. What are some of the issues we talked about that related to the reason why we didn't think that doing it, that is a temporary solution, would be the best idea?
Thank you.
Well, they're really first solar issues, if you're prepared to speak.
And Mayor, maybe I can answer that. We were asked a week ago to take a look at this issue, go back and see if there was a way that we can operate efficiently and effectively, have the security that we need by bringing in traffic off of Elliott. And Terry Jones, who is one of our operations leaders, sent an email a couple of days ago, and I think we sent that to your law department, and we sent that to the city manager's office. And there are, you know, basically seven reasons why we can't accommodate that request. The first one has to do with security staging. Security for this company is very, very significant. And that means we have to have a security station, and we have to have staging for that. There is no room or space for security or staging coming in off of Elliott. You know, this is an operation where we can't mix, you know, security and staging and direction with trucks that are trying to park at the same time and back in and out of the loading and receiving area. And as you can see here, if you brought in the trucks from here, this is going to be an office building, and hopefully this will be an office building sooner than later.
I don't want to interrupt you, but actually you can, because you got nothing but space there. I think you hit on what might be the best answer. if you're going to build an office building, you're going to build Fab 2 sooner rather than later, then it doesn't seem like it makes sense to come up with what would be very temporary solutions, because I'm hoping that Fab 2 gets built real early. I'm hoping that office building gets built real early. Is that what I'm maybe hearing? Hint, hint? Let's face it. Yeah. Realistically, you got nothing but dirt to the west.
Right. Yeah.
Sure, you can lay down asphalt and you can create whatever staging area you want. All you got to do is move a chain link fence and you can create whatever security situation you want. I understand that can be done. The question is it the reasonable thing to be done? I think Councilmember Higgins hits on a good point that in many ways this would be almost a faux situation, because number one, it seems like if we do that physically, how long will that be there? It may be there very, very short time until all of a sudden you're coming back to us and say, gee, we got bad news. We want to build Fab 2. That would be horrible news, yeah, right? We're gonna create more jobs. And all this temporary stuff we did is now now gone, and then we're going to move back to the dual entry. We're going to have the western access, and we're going to come back and access off of Signal Butte. And the other thing is, I think realistically, is the normal operation is there's going to be traffic on Signal Butte, because Signal Butte is going to be a major arterial, especially when the 24 is finished. That's going to be a straight shot coming north off the 24, and it's going to be a straight shot coming south off the 60. And those two, you know you're going to get major arterial type traffic, especially since you don't have Chrisman coming through there. So Ellsworth and Signal Butte, and from what I hear Alan say, they're designed to be major arterials. They're going to be six lanes minimum with a median in the middle. So these are going to be high volume, high traffic areas. And, maybe we ought to just plan for that and develop as if that's going to happen. I mean, is that sort of, I understand you got seven different reasons. Maybe there's
number
did
seven.
Did I synthesize those?
You gave number seven, Mayor.
Okay.
So.
Okay.
So I think the recommendation is really to continue with the original plans, because this is what the plans will be. These will be the entrances. And the way I look at it, it's not just for Fab 1 and 2, it's all for 3 and 4. I like the idea to keep pushing forward for solar. That vision, ultimately, that's what's going to happen. Yes, coming off of Elliott, I guess you could look at that, but it really would be, in our minds, a very temporary fix. And could, we could be in the midst of just having completed that and then having to really move all the traffic back to Signal Butte anyway.
Well, especially with that future office building, is that dependent upon Fab 2, or is that a sort of a separate potential? Yes or no, or is that basically you haven't totally decided yet?
Hasn't been determined, Mayor. It could be built at the same time Fab 2 is, or it could be built earlier.
But it's primarily, my guess is to handle the management for the overall site and perhaps some other activities that are not directly manufacturing related?
Yes, Mayor.
My understanding, it's driven by two fabs. The need for
okay.
it.
Okay.
Any other questions?
On this side.
On the site, because we're just going to quickly just finish up the DA.
So we get that letter sent to us today? I didn't get it. The 7-point letter, why the parking doesn't work.
The email that we received?
The email?
Yes. That could be important.
Okay. All right. So we're going to move on past the site. Okay. Good. Thank you. Let's move through this pretty quickly.
Okay. So just continuation, we'll work with them on a foreign trade zone designation, customized plan review. We'll work with them on the development fees. We project each fab will produce about $1.9 million in development fees and about $3 million in construction sales tax to the city. We've already talked about the zoning approval on April 28th. Council will consider this item on May 16th. I think one of the items that they'll talk about on Monday is the HR efforts, the employment actions they'll start taking this fall in order for preparation for start of manufacturing in the first half of 2012. This is a rendering. Now, one of the key things that occurs is to accommodate this use on the Mesa Proving Grounds. There will be a need also Monday night to discuss and consider three amendments to the three DMB agreements we did back in 2008. One is primarily, they're all primarily tied to the development of Gaylord Hotel and Convention Center and the goals of that intention back in 2008. Many of the triggers within those agreements were based on Gaylord being that first major development within that. You know, back then we were hoping a company like First Solar would show up. We just didn't envision it would be this quick and maybe at this part of the Mesa Proving Grounds. But in order to accomplish that, there's really three items that we'll address in the amendments. Is first, to handle the hospitality slowdown that's occurred over the last couple of years. We'll extend the timelines for Gaylord, additional 3 years to allow the market to come back and to develop. We think First Solar might be also an additional help to spur Gaylord to move forward. We'll also...
Scott, let me ask you one thing. Is there any additional obligation on the city by extending Gaylord? Do we have any expenses, obligations, anything if we extend Gaylord?
No.
Okay, that's what I wanted. There's no cost to the city.
No, there's
no.
There's no obligation to the city.
Everything just moves forward.
Okay.
The second part is with the intention that the Gaylord was going to be the first in, and it was going to trigger a number of different things with the DMB amendments. We didn't initially want a First Solar to trigger those same type of things. It's much different to build a 12-story hotel versus a LARB fab facility. So we're essentially working to carve out the First Solar development out of the DMB situation to in order to the DMB to continue to move forward with their plans, to not trigger city performances or DMB performances. The last one is to adjust for land prices for future City of Mesa real estate acquisitions that are anticipated in the overall DMB improvements. So that'll go forward Monday evening. And with that, that's all.
So that's what's before you. Again, there's the amendments to the DMB agreement we just covered here. We'll also then have the approval of the site plan. John, am I saying that correct? For First Solar?
Yes, those have been approved by PNC.
Those have been approved by,
unless they get an appeal.
That's been approved by PNC, sorry. And then the council will approve for First Solar the development agreement for First Solar, correct?
So we're approving the First Solar development agreement and the amendments to the DMB. And once again, just if I could restate what you said on the DMB, the idea is not to eliminate any responsibilities by amending the DMB, but to avoid unintended consequences, since those development agreement, or since that development agreement was based on a Gaylord construction going first, since First Solar was first, it created some unintended consequences that neither one of us anticipated.
Correct.
And all we're doing by carving out First Solar is to leave basically the responsibilities that go with Gaylord with the Gaylord development.
Correct.
And then to create. And to recognize the realities of what we're doing as it relates to First Solar, and it won't upset or change Gaylord. And when Gaylord comes, DMB will be responsible for basically the same things that they would have been responsible for otherwise.
Correct.
Right. Okay. And Mayor, those were obligations both to DMB and the city.
And the city.
And one just one quick example was with the coming of the Gaylord Hotel was the requirement, which would make sense because of the intensive development, of a new fire station in that area. Well, First Solar in this location doesn't make sense to trigger another fire station because right. There's one that we're just starting, I think, groundbreaking a couple
right
of weeks,
street.
A quarter of a mile away. So it just didn't make sense. And so that's one of the reasons we're carving this out.
Yeah, I think to that point is one of the initial demands was to buy a special piece of fire apparatus to handle a tall story hotel. That's not right now. We don't need to do that right now.
And that's one of the unintended consequences.
That's one of the unintended consequences.
Right. It makes absolutely no sense. So what we're doing is we're saying that obligation still exists, but it exists when Gaylord's built.
Correct.
Not when First Solar's built. So that's what we're doing by amending these agreements.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Okay.
All righty. Any questions, comments?
Okay,
thank you. All right. Next item on the agenda is to hear presentation, discuss, provide direction on environmental compliance fee.
Mayor and Council, if you recall, the last time, a couple weeks ago, as we were briefing the Council on the budget, one of the items that was discussed was the environmental fee. And the Council requests that we come back one more time just give for two items. One, to discuss at least kind of give some options that if the council were to consider an increase, what opportunities would that provide to cover some of the, again, unfunded mandates that continue to be paid for out of the city's funds, whether it's the general fund or the transportation fund. So we have a presentation on that. And then also included is the council asked us to look at some other, what's the word?
Alternative
variable ways to fund the environmental fee with a differential cost. And so we've got some of those options. So Scott.
Good morning, Mayor, Council. My name is Scott Boucher. I'm here today to present the environmental compliance fee. Just to recap some of the stuff that we've talked about before, for the environmental compliance fee, there are eligible expenses that total up to approximately $10.4 million annually. Of these, the development and sustainability and fleet portions of eligible expenses are currently fully funded with the environmental compliance fee. What we'll talk about a little bit more detail today is the parks and recreation and transportation portion of the fee. To recap, with parks and recreation, their retention basin maintenance, which is a requirement of our municipal stormwater permit that's issued by the Arizona Department of Environmental Quality, has approximately $5.2 million in eligible expenses. That's for the maintenance of those basins, which are one of our best management practices for stormwater. So of that, the current $5.2 million in eligible expenses, there's $3.8 million in environmental fee funding that goes to Parks and Recreation, and there's $1.4 million in an unfunded need. Now, the unfunded need is a little strange. There's $169,000 of that is actually paid for with the general fund currently. And then the remaining portion, approximately $1.2 million, is not funded, does not have a funding source currently. That's cuts that have happened in retention base and maintenance.
Right. So, Mayor and Council, what's happened over the last 3 years as part of our budget reductions, we've cut a significant expenses out of the parks maintenance budget. And frankly, it's starting to show. It related a lot to the turf care, was the watering, the tree maintenance, and fertilization. Those have been reduced significantly. And I guess what we're suggesting is really to continue to maintain these basins. And it's important to have a healthy turf, to have trees. That obviously helps to create the efficiency of those basins. Those costs would be eligible under this fund, but they're not necessarily currently within the general fund expense because they've been eliminated. But they certainly would be beneficial to the parks.
Well, what you're saying is that we're creating long-term life. This is one of those things that happens when you don't maintain certainly these basins at a current level, that long-term you create other issues, because without the grass and without the things, you potentially create environmental issues because the basins are not functioning as they were designed. Right. Is that what I'm hearing?
Correct. Okay.
Right. So rather than say eligible, really those are sort of required expenditures.
Oh, yeah. Ultimately, we would have
I'm a little bit, when it says eligible, it seems like, oh, gee, we have this, maybe we can do it. No, these are costs that we have to incur. But what we're looking at is that can we match those costs with the collection of certain fees that connect or are directly connected with those costs?
Yes.
Okay. Is that what we're saying?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, that is correct, Mayor. All of the expenses that we have with the environmental compliance fee are requirements. We have to have those.
Yeah, so I get what you're saying with eligible, but that's really a misnomer.
Okay.
They're required expenses, and what we're saying is we have funding through our environment. If I'm reading this right, we have required expenditures that are what the staff has determined is directly related to the environmental requirement. That adds up to 5.2. We're collecting only $3.8 million from our environmental fees. So we're really funding from other sources. Is that what I'm hearing? $1.4 million
in the
of required costs
that are impacting the parks and recreation budget. That is correct.
Whatever budget it requires,
right. Well,
it impacts.
Right.
We're not collecting that environmental
that
fee,
is correct.
And we're $1.4 million short.
That's correct.
Because whether it comes from parks or
wherever,
it's not getting it's general fund, and it's not being connected with the fee collection of the environmental issue, which we already have a fee component in place. But it's not covering all our required costs.
Correct.
I'm getting blank looks. That's accurate?
Yeah, it's not covering.
Okay,
yeah.
Thank you.
Yes, sorry.
I just want to make sure I understand it.
Sorry, yes.
Okay.
Okay.
Councilmember Higgins understands it, too.
Yeah, well, then
Hey,
we're all good.
Somebody wake up Councilmember Glover, okay?
He was there a long time.
He was there. He's bored because he said, I don't know why you guys don't get this. I got it before the meeting started. Go ahead.
Excellent. Also included in there is transportation expenses, which are street sweeping and storm drain maintenance. Those total $3.2 million a year, and currently those don't receive any funding from the environmental compliance fee. In addition, one of the pressures that's been put on the transportation department is that the state has redirected highway user restricted funds, the HERF funds, for a total of $3.7 million a year that they've seen a reduction in HERF funds that they'll be receiving from the state. So transportation.
That's money that should be coming to us and has been coming to us, and the state took that money, swept it. They really didn't sweep it, but in a sense, they redirected it, took it. And those are gas tax that our citizens pay that are now going to fund state issues rather than local issues.
That is correct, sir.
Okay.
And
that was one of the non-gimmicks that the legislature used, right? No gimmicks involved in this. All right. I just want to make clear that the no gimmicks are actually creating burdens, and this is the example of the direct burden on local taxpayers from the state balancing its budget.
That is correct, Mayor.
Okay.
And discussing the same as what we just talked about with Parks and Recreation, transportation, any cuts from the reduced revenue that's coming in from the HERF funds must be made in non-environmental areas, because those environmental requirements of street sweeping, storm drain maintenance still must continue to be done. So we were asked to come up with a recommendation on a fee increase. We've actually got a couple of recommendations here that we've laid out. One of them would be with a 50-cent increase, so that would be 50 cents per month per utility account increase to the environmental compliance fee to take it to a total of 350. With it being split, the revenue from that fee increase being split evenly between Parks and Recreation and transportation. The Parks and Recreation portion would help fund the $169,000 that's currently coming out of the general fund, and $480,000 would also go to transportation, which would partially fund their storm drain maintenance activities.
Councilman Higgins.
Just really quick, Mayor, thanks. The park ranger, does that help our environmental compliance somehow?
They are actually doing inspections of those basins. You know, when you look at the percentage of basins versus parks, there's a large percentage of what most people see and feel as a park that are actually basins. And so the rangers are out there doing those inspections periodically to make sure they're looking for anything from trash and vandalism, anything else that may be happening out there. So,
I mean, they are our eyes and ears on those large basins. There really isn't a regular presence there other than what the park rangers.
So there's nobody like in your department who's responsible
on a
not on a regular basis.
You'd only get the call after the park ranger identified.
Right.
Okay.
We may get a call for an illegal dumping or something of that nature that then we would respond
to. Well, as part of our efforts to streamline operations in the budget thing, right?
Yeah.
What we've done is that we're cross-utilized. Like, we have our building inspectors who are now code compliance. We have our park rangers who do more than just range around parks.
Right.
They actually are the eyes and ears of various departments, and they call in, they schedule, they do things that they ordinarily would not have done, and that's part of what we've done to try and adjust to our new reality. Is that
right? And we actually include in our reporting requirements inspections that are done by the Parks and Recreation staff of those retention
basins. So, your permit.
Right, for our permit.
That is required.
We rely on
plan.
Those are still,
whether
that,
they're
that's
a park ranger, whether they're a park ranger or an inspector, if they could be an inspector.
Other cities, and in another era, we might have had personnel that did nothing but go around and inspect parks.
For stormwater maintenance compliance.
For stormwater maintenance. What we're saying is, in a very roundabout way, is, listen, we're cross-utilizing various employees to accomplish these issues. And when they're doing that, they're not doing something else.
Otherwise, they could be doing other jobs.
So they really are being utilized for something that's not in their direct job. Councilmember Fender.
If I can offer an opposing view, you know, it sounds great what you just said, and I'd had some trouble with this slide and the other one. It says the two bullet points are fund a park ranger position, and there's been some reasonable logic behind that, and then fund additional administrative costs. If that's, you know, out of this whole menu of things that we can do, and I've heard these wonderful comments this morning about the parks and the turfs and the everything, not to restate those, I'm kind of taken back a little bit, causing me some pause to say, okay, we're going to add a position, which throughout the whole city, broad city,
restore,
I think there's a lot of areas I'd rather restore first. And, you know, we've pushed folks on, especially on the Ranger portion of things, to look at innovation, you know, IVITA, other things, and it's been utilized well. Maybe there's a better way to do that money. The other one on the administrative costs, if we're going to the citizens and taking all the heat to say, hey, we're going to increase these fees, and this is why, and we've stated, you know, in presentations at committee and here about the turfs and all the improvements, putting as your bullet point, fund additional administrative costs wouldn't be the one I would, in fact, I probably should flip-flop this whole list and say needs for basin maintenance. And I'd never even put additional administrative costs on there.
It seems like we're getting way too cute here. I mean, aren't we? Where we started was we have these costs. The state's taken money away from us. We have these requirements. We need a funding source to directly relate to those. I mean, isn't that where we are? Why are we getting into all these details? Because this creates, and I agree with Councilmember Fenter, this creates the impression that somehow we're just using this as an excuse when that's really not the case. I get that that's not the case, but it's not coming across in this slide.
So here's what's happening today. We're not asking to restore or hire anything new. What we're saying, these are existing costs today. Okay. Whether we fund it from the environmental fee or any other fund, these costs are in the budget today. We have to go do the inspections. We choose to do it with a park ranger. We have administrative costs to oversee the purchase and the scheduling of the maintenance of these facilities. It's a very small portion of this. We are very careful because Scott gets audited by this. And what happens is the auditor comes back to these discussions. And we look at this documentation about whether we got the approval to do that. So that's why we're being very careful and very full disclosure, because there's too many departments around here that understand what happens when they don't have that clarity. And so he's being very careful on that. The first $169,000 are existing costs today. They exist today. They are being paid and they will continue to be paid. They will have to be paid because of the requirement of the permit. And that effort will be costed to the city, whether it's through the fee, funded through the fee, or funded in the general fund. They're expenses that exist today and they're not gonna go away. What we're also proposing, though, that we have reduced cost over the years for the maintenance of these same basins through fertilization, watering, I'm not sure what else, Mark.
Trees,
that's right. We've let a lot of trees, frankly, we haven't maintained the trees. We've taken a lot of trees out of the parks. So what we're recommending, that if there is an opportunity to increase this fee to recognize those federal mandates, what we're proposing is to recover more of the true cost of these mandates. Now, some of those costs are already being paid for out of the general fund. We've identified those first because we think that provides relief to the general fund, which is already carrying that burden. And then we can also suggest that we could apply those dollars to help fund maintenance that we've essentially deferred, probably the best way ever, eliminated, but recognizing at some point, because of the loss of turf and the trees, we really do need to bring back at some point. So the only thing that's being restored that is in the budget today is really the maintenance dollars. And so certainly we can reprioritize this and say, if there's any increase that only goes towards the increase on the maintenance side to restore turf and the trees and to the watering, we can do that. That's incremental. That's new. That would be added into the budget. The $160,000 that we're talking about does exist today in our budget. It's in the general fund. And that would be a portion of that, obviously, then could be covered by the fee.
Well, and I appreciate the bridge, because I think what we lost is when you jumped from the general down to some of these details, it gave, to me at least, it gave the wrong impression that you were not accomplishing what you talked about, but you gave a good bridge. When you look at it in the whole, too, which is another thing, once again, one of the reasons why we're burdened with these is because there have been reductions from the state. There have been funding. So when we say general fund, we have to look at both sides of the equation, that there have been things drawn from both our highway, our street maintenance, and our general fund through reductions from the state, but we still have the same obligations. And so we have to make up for that somehow. And you're going to make up for it one of two ways. You're either going to direct some revenue sources with the actual expenditures, or you're going to have to reduce in some other area and shift those revenues over, general fund revenues over, because these things have to be maintained. So what you're saying, though, is that what you're also proposing is that there be some restoration of some deferred maintenance, which we believe is in many ways causing us to spend more and create bigger problems on environmental and other areas because we haven't been keeping up with that maintenance.
Well, and maybe, Mayor, really in my mind I was thinking in terms of not only that, but at some point in the near future, the general, if we don't have additional dollars coming, the general fund's going to have to step up and put in more dollars towards those basins
right.
to cover back the turf and the trees.
Yeah, because it's going to create more problems and greater costs.
It won't be meeting the obligations of the stormwater retention.
Exactly. And so this is, in many ways, this restoration is actually, in what you're saying, is preventative maintenance that spends a little money now to hopefully avoid larger expenditures in the future. Is that what I'm hearing?
At some point, we're going to have to do it.
Okay.
Whether we fund it here or out of the general.
Councilman Richens?
You know, I don't have any problem adding State of Arizona legislative pass-through compliance fee, or whatever we want to call it, because it's really what it is. There's in these slides, and your next slide is going to talk about a dollar increase and a 50-cent increase. What is the increase that you need to cover everything you need in transportation and everything you need in parks? And I do agree with Mayor and the Fincher conversation about staffing and all that stuff. You know, focus on the hard costs. But I appreciate the reason why you have to bring those. You know, but.
Councilmember Bridget, well, if you go to slide 4, right, that shows the $1.4 million that is eligible but unfunded, correct?
Is that just in parks?
Where's the total? I'm sorry, there was a total number. Where's the total number?
Overall, the total was in the very beginning at $10.4 million. So all of the expenditures that we have said qualify for the environmental fee, that $10.4 million, which is the total annual. In order to recover that complete 10.4, we'd be looking at an increase of $2.38, which would put it to a total of $5.38 per month per utility account.
I mean, we're not recommending that. We recognize that would be at this point. And that's why I think it's been over time that you've seen that. I think it's just become more poignant as the state has, I'm not sure what the word is, redirected some of the resources that we're utilizing to help pay for these unfunded mandates. And so we've, over the years, that's why we've seen as more of this has been passed on to the cities and has put more and more pressure on us, we've been increasing that fee just a little bit each year to try to, I guess, continue to recognize that impact to the city. And so we're trying, that's what we're proposing is, I think the council has to give some options. Again, there's a lot of different options here. It can be 25 cents, it can be 50 cents, whatever council is comfortable with. We recognize we're trying to do this in a very prudent way.
I think I need to understand the overall impact, how this factors in with our property tax rate, our water and wastewater. So what is going to be the total effect of a lot of this stuff really has been pushed onto us by levels of government above us. You know, so what are the total costs that we're going to have to increase to our residents? So I'm just trying to get a scope, because in a series of meetings over a series of weeks, we can talk about 50 cents here and a couple dollars here, but there's a net effect to all of that that I want to be sensitive to. I'm not saying that we should
pay it,
you know, but I probably spend $24 a month on pizza, and that's probably about the net that I've heard in our various discussions. So maybe I'll forego a pizza each month.
24 a month?
A month or a day? A week?
A pizza a month. Wow. We don't eat pizza that often. $24. I mean, you know, I'm just trying to get a sense of what that cumulative.
Right. So, really, I think it's between. I'm thinking, and maybe Chuck and Candace can help me out. This would be a proposal, obviously, an increase. Of 25, 50 cents, whatever. And then I think the only other one you'd really have to look at, I'm thinking from a general application, not would be really in the utilities. And we gave, and I don't remember, I don't have those numbers in front of me.
We do have one in the water utilities that's a pass-through.
Right.
And then
okay.
Well, we had, that's 45 cents a month per water account.
Recall that the state passed on that fee to all cities to pay for the Department of Water Resources. So there's going to be
who's got their calculator out? Then
45 cents. 44 cents. 40.
I think it's about
in her head.
I had it in front of me. It's about 45 cents per month.
45 cents per month. On that.
That was a $612,000 per year that Mesa's going to have to pay.
And we've talked at 6 or 7% in water and wastewater.
And the dollar amount on the average.
$398 per utility account, $397, just under $4 for all utility related adjustments.
At what? Are you using the average or what are you
Yes,
using?
I'm using the average usage.
At 10,000 or 7? What are you using it at?
On the proposed increase, so that
right,
would be.
Right, that's a 10,000 usage per
month. That's still pretty high for most people at 10,000. So most people are going to see, what is that, four? Would you say the number was?
That's just under $4 a month.
Mm-hmm. So you have $4 a month there.
45 cents.
Yeah, does not include the 45 cents.
That does not include
the 45 cents. Does not include the 45
cents. So $4.45 there. And then
is there
going to
be much of a change on the – I mean, I know we'll have to adjust the rate to get the same amount of money on the
secondary property tax. But that's the idea. The idea there is not to adjust the levy. So the same dollar amount
right,
that the average correct, homeowner paid in the prior year, they'd be paying the same
so
dollar amount – this current year.
Right now, the proposal is not to increase the amount collected on secondary property.
So,
tax.
No.
Correct.
Not include the tax levy, remain the same.
Okay. And so our net.
I mean, so we're at like, what, 445? Is that what we I think
445
plus
whatever
we do
here.
We would
do. So if you
plus what
if
you,
you this were
Gosh,
50
I can still
cents,
have my pizza.
It would be $5 a month.
That's
with a dollar think, with a dollar of that, there. It'd be about $5 a month with a dollar of that direct pass throughs from the state. Those are direct imposit, and I want to make clear I would love not to do that.
Yeah, the 440. I mean, that's
we got no choice. That is dictated. That is passed through. Thank your legislators for that. And then 397 on what would be utility.
Well, even anything we capture here is stuff the federal government's mandating.
Well, that's what
for
I said.
If we
were to choose 50 cents or 25 cents or whatever we choose here,
right?
That's not our choice. That's a straight out.
Well, imposition. At least in this, I. If I have a retention base in my neighborhood, you know, the grass is going to be alive and the trees will be giving shade. You know, it's something that is not, I mean, so there's an added benefit to the citizens. I was with a community group and we talked about this issue and they're like, and we had the meeting in the retention basin and they were just thrilled at the prospect that we might actually be fertilizing and watering the grass and taking better care of it if we did it this way. So,
Councilman Higgins, I'm sorry.
Really, to understand, like wrap up a little bit, these environmental fees we're talking about today are separate from the extra things we do in water. And do we do environmental fees in any other of our billing that other than water?
So when it's impacting the utility specifically,
okay,
that cost will be passed along as part of that utility mm-hmm. increase. And frankly, there probably are a lot of, we can imagine in the water quality area and wastewater, there's a tremendous amount of that cost already embedded in that rate. Now, because the state specifically passed on this ADQ or ADWR rate, we're passing that on
as a separate line item.
As a separate line item, so that'll be separate. So
that has nothing to do with our ability. That has absolutely nothing to do with our ability to deliver water. That's
we're not
purely
treating the water any
that's
differently.
That's purely we don't want to fund ADWR. Cities, you're going to fund it.
Right.
That's cities and counties. You have to fund the Department of Water Resources. That's very different than you have to maintain this level of quality in your water, and so that's an environmental, or you have to dispose of your chemicals this way,
right,
which is embedded in the process.
That falls
this 45 cent has nothing to do with the process. It's purely a cost shift.
Okay. But this $10.4 million is all the other unfunded federal mandates that we have to do as a city to come up to EPA stormwater regulations, right, which include street sweeping and the parks and everything you just talked about.
That is correct. And not just stormwater, it's also air quality, asbestos, yep. There's other regulations, but it's to fund the other unfunded environmental mandates. Yeah.
So, and currently right now, we just pay for this however we can find money to pay for it. So we've never had a dedicated source to cover this whole thing as a city. Like, we've never said, hey, we're going to pay this $10 million with this fee.
We started off with the smaller amount.
Right.
But
it never covered it.
We've obviously recognized in the beginning. And it became to a point, I think, where we were having to try to just cover incrementally, because it was coming so, it was so much and coming at the budget when we were shrinking our budget, and this was one way to try to recognize that. So,
yeah, there's some things that we could manage around, and we've done a very good job of managing around that, shifting, reducing those things. These are costs that we have no control over, or limited control over. Councilmember Finter.
So just to clarify and make sure it's on the record, we are not hiring an additional park ranger. So my misunderstanding on that, we're not going to have additional administrative costs. We have our current administrative costs, and we're talking about funding those. And then the remaining for the basin maintenance, sounds like the basin maintenance is going to be a top priority.
Yes.
Getting it back to everything everybody said, and that is a vital component of our stormwater retention portion. And under those circumstances, I feel a lot better about that. I think I misunderstood the...
No, I apologize. And it's explaining this. We've got two pieces in here, recovering costs that are already in the budget and adding to get back some of the maintenance. I don't want to represent that this gets everything, but I think it will show some demonstrated improvement in our basin.
And we hope that's a twofer. Number one, we increase our ability to maintain from an environmental standpoint, but also we... As Councilman Richin said, we improve our basins, our
right.
parks, and bring them up to a standard that that our citizens will be able to enjoy. So
Absolutely.
We sort of get a twofer from that.
Absolutely.
Councilman Richin.
I'd really prefer this approach, so there's a direct cost benefit that's pretty transparent, than just embedding it in a, you know, needing a sales tax increase or trying to have a property tax or those kind of things. I mean, I know fee by government is probably the new trend, but, you know, there's some transparency here that I really like. So there's a connected cost and mandate and a benefit all associated with this specific fee. And I think we need to do a really good job communicating that. And I kind of like this approach much better than you have to consider new revenue sources, because this is pretty transparent and it's directly connected to what we need to accomplish.
So what guidance are you looking for? Because you've thrown out here $25.50 or a dollar.
Yeah, really, and I think we can go with that if we at 25 cents, 50 cents, and then we threw in the dollar opportunity. So.
Yeah, but what you're saying is to truly cover the total cost related to this
everything
is twice that much.
Yeah.
You need a $6 fee instead of a $3 fee.
But
if you want to cover
$5.50.
Yeah,
it's $2.38 is what you said total.
$2.38.
Yeah, you need. We're currently collecting three. What we're talking about is to cover these unfunded costs that we would either increase that $3 fee to $3.25, $3.54, and even that will not really come close to covering that, because we really would need a fee of almost $5.50 to cover that. Am I hearing you correctly?
That is correct, sir.
Does that make sense, Dave? Yep. Okay.
So, Mayor, on this, I don't know what slide it is. With the alternatives, it's a few more slides. It's like your last slide before your question slide, since that's where you were or going. Or I see the different fee alternatives. Couldn't you actually?
Oh, we didn't get to that.
Oh,
slide.
Well,
sorry.
I'm trying to move this along since we have a 9 o'clock meeting here.
Talking, sorry.
I just wondered if you can't just continue to do that. You know, I mean, 3,000 more. Why don't you do the 3 to 10? And with your
Councilmember Higgins has moved ahead in the presentation.
Yeah,
by one slide.
No, by one slide, by one. What are we talking about?
So
this has nothing to do with water use.
No. Well, okay, I'll
okay,
stop
hold
talking.
On. Let's solve this problem, and then we'll come back. We'll get
to
your point.
I thought that's all the same problem.
No, this is just how you divide it up.
What we're going to charge.
Yeah.
Two different directions.
What is, where do we get the spot where we minimize, I guess this is the question, and it doesn't come out in your presentation. What fee increase does staff believe covers the basics and we get the most bang for our buck without creating the huge hit?
Okay, so
what's that sweet spot?
Mary,
I'm getting the sense that 25 cents really doesn't get us way far. 237 is, I don't think there's anything anyone on this council would want to go for.
Right.
Somewhere in between that.
Sure, here's what, let me propose this question. I think from what I can hear from council, from what I've heard in council and talking in our strategic planning process, I understand certainly streets and the street program is important, but I think what's impacting our neighborhoods quite a bit these days is the health of our parks and what they see in our parks. And I think that is where we probably need to focus on. What I would propose, and I need some help here, Scott, if it's at, and Mark, if we go to the 50 cents and that generates the 960,000, I know at 480 we get some of the remaining. Well, my question, let me back up. At 25 cents, we can get, I don't know if it, we get 480, but
you get 480.
We have 480. Will that, how much of that will get you back to what you need in parks, or do you need the full 50 cents? Do you need nine? How much do you
lack? Let's just go to 50 cents. If I get 50 cents, am I going to notice? Am I going to notice a difference
Isn't
in
that
my parks?
Close yes. to the number we are looking yes. for in the
We're,
parks?
Our master plan calls for, we maintain per acre is how we calculate our cost. Our master plan calls for $9,500. Currently, we're at $5,500 an acre. If okay. I can get to $7,500 an acre, we're going to see drastic improvements in the quality of the turf and the trees. And right around 50
and you,
cents.
And you think 50 cents is what you need to make that?
That's about $1 million.
At 25 cents?
I'm sorry, 60. For me, for that to get to that point, it would be 66 cents in parks.
Okay.
To get to cover
but that. So, Mayor, what I'd propose is if we, if council's, we would take the 50 cents, let us go put that into the parks program, maintenance program. Let's come back and may have a present, quick presentation on what that means. We may not get the full amount, but I think it'll be material. You'll see a difference.
Yes.
I think the main thing is that if our residents, and I think Dave hit it on the head, if our residents see a change, that's something that they've shown considerable support for. If we're getting something that feels good for us and in our books, but the residents walk out and they say, gee, I'm paying an extra X cents a year, and my park looks the same, I got no interest in going.
Yeah,
there.
I mean, you're that's, talking that's a, about the difference between a pizza month now, and now we're to Diet Coke. I'm going to give up one Diet Coke to have better maintenance in my basins and my streets cleaner. Let's not be cowards about this. Let's do it. I'd support a dollar. Let's get this. Let's get it done right. And let's show our residents what a great town this is and how well we can maintain our streets and our basins. I mean.
Vice Mayor.
Chris, as much as I like to talk about the things that people can see, sometimes it's the things you can't see that are just as important. I can't see storm drain maintenance being done, but if those storm drains don't work, I sure see what happens. What's the benefit of the dollar increase to fully funding the storm drain maintenance?
Well, what we're doing is, if you remember, Vice Mayor and Council, is those will get done. They get done at the expense of less street overlays because they're a mandate. We have to do those. So you recall,
it's the trade from
it's
one area
the trade.
To another.
So is the trade of deferred maintenance in streets or the deferred maintenance in parks? That's a tough call, but where I agree, and I think we can continue to look at stormwater maintenance, I know it's a priority, but I think that's where the direction we need from council is. If the priority is, while it's not, let's get the parks in place. Now, one of the things about parks, it functions a very important part of storm drainage. It holds it, so we can help there. But that if the priority is, let us look at a dollar, come back and show you, here's what we can do in the main basins, and if there sounds like there could be some amount that we could even, with a dollar, could help out with some of the storm drain maintenance, then that would be the balance.
Storm
but the majority of that would go to park basin. That would be our first priority in that, and then have maybe 30 cents of that would be going towards.
Well, it's going to substitive items.
Well, that's what I don't think it's a tough call as long as it's going to substantive items.
Yes. Right.
But what's not clear from this, I think we'd like you to see, come back and show us what the difference is.
Let's show you.
I don't care whether you fund a park ranger or a street sweeper or whatever. I want to know what the result is going to be.
So let's take the dollar.
How you get there.
And what the difference is.
Yeah, can you model one other idea here? The parks stuff has a direct benefit to the residents, but maybe not so much a direct benefit to the non-residential customers. I mean, do we want to consider something like putting, a 50-cent basin expense on the residential customers and a little bit that's storm drain, but maybe the fee is a little bit higher on non-residential customers for the storm drain maintenance component.
So the difference, if you go to slide 11, it kind of feeds into Councilman Manigan's point. When you start making that differential split, the ratio of non-residential to residential is so huge that differential in rates makes, I mean, we can do it. It doesn't really have a material effect on the overall outcome. If whatever you do on the resident, whatever the fee you do, is driven by the residential customer. Because there's 100 of the 60,000 accounts approximately that we collect this fee from, and we collect it from all utility accounts. Is that correct?
That is correct.
All utility accounts.
All utility.
Regardless of your city
anything,
or county.
Solid waste or
solid waste and,
anyone,
and gas.
Any one account that you
all
have.
Gas utility right. customers.
All gas.
Pay into this. All residential, all commercial.
And Valley too.
So that's how we're collected. That's how that fee is collected across the board. Now, what you see
on slide. It just sounds cleaner and easier just to.
Yeah, now, Councilwoman Higgins asked us to look at, and that's why you see these rates so differential if we try to create a residential, non-residential division. And maybe someone can explain, but you can see that split.
Right, and this is just to get us to the current revenue of $5.8 million annually. So if we had reduced down the amount of the residential to $250, it would increase the non-residential to $10.04, but it would still only collect, that's to keep us whole right now at $5.8 million annually.
I'm sorry, I'm completely confused. Water use, 131, we have 160,000 customers?
160,000.
131,000 of those use less than 3,000 gallons a month?
No, there was a mistake. I actually
oh,
changed
yeah, it. That was a big mistake.
Oh, they changed
if,
it
if
up
If you
here.
Look up here, that was pointed out by Candace last night. I was able to change
you.
It on
never get those
the laptop here.
Hate them.
But it wasn't on that one.
I mean, I'm looking around and we're all yeah. going, what is going on? Okay. All right. I got you. Okay.
So I apologize flipped. For that, man.
Flip your
should be flipped.
Greater than.
Amazing what a, just a direction of a
little symbol means.
Little so. Symbol.
Yes.
Okay. So 131,000 customers is greater than 3,000.
We were just trying to come up with a couple of different options how to create that division. We did it over the first on residential versus non-residential. Then we mm-hmm. tried to figure out a way to do it, maybe consistent with our water. We don't. There really isn't a good ratio to yeah, David. So we just tried to give it a shot, and so here's what you see.
And whichever way you look at it, the larger group is going to be your residential. No matter which way we looked at it, a couple different ways, your large group is your residential.
The difficulty with slide 11, that option, it would, we're a little, theoretically we could come up with it, where practically as far as the billing and how we split that up on the billing could be a change, we'd have to go into reprogramming in our billing cycle, but it could eventually happen, but that's more of a challenge for
don't
us.
Touch the computer.
It's not
might I suggest something, when you reprogram it, do you make sure that you're
yeah,
greater
we'll
than or less
that.
Than or going the right way?
Well, Scott won't be reprogramming it for us.
couldn't this be something you do with the waste? You know how you calculate wastewater charges every year? Couldn't it just be a one-time wastewater charge, same kind of calculation period,
oh, the winter
and then use
based
that
on
every
average?
Year?
Do it as a one-time.
Yeah, and base it on the, you know, I mean, we already do something, right? We do that.
We
base your wastewater
average. We call
on the
it
average.
The winter average.
So why couldn't we use the same time to come up with this for a year? I mean, that sounds fair to me.
Mayor, Council, let me try to maybe make this a little more clear. We only have 136,000 water accounts. Okay.
Yeah.
So when we're talking about 166,000 accounts, what we're talking about are people who, for example, are gas customers but not water customers, or solid waste customers but not water customers.
Well, which group do you put them into if they're not
than.
A water?
Right. That's
which one did you put them into up there?
They are in the less than 3,000 gallons
3,
because if you don't receive City of Mesa water, you can't use.
Well, it would have been nice if there would have been a third line, because that feeds into our other discussion on water rates. And that's why you saw a lot of consternation.
No, you need to say, we need to say 131, and then I think there's only 5,000, because there's about 135, how many total water?
Well, of our permanent residents who use less than 3,000, there's only, I'm sorry, I believe it's only about 800. It's a very small number of our permanent accounts that use less than 3,000.
Well, okay.
Okay, yeah, because that's what we heard before, so
right.
that's why.
Right.
The balance
besides the fact that the permanent. Greater than symbol was reversed, even that number was a little confusing. So I get it now. Dave?
Our new financial system and the billing and everything wouldn't need custom programming for that. We could just model that right into what do they call that thing? Everybody's wearing their wristbands.
Well, it's all custom.
Next one, our computer, our billing system is not our financial system.
Yeah. The customer information system, which does all the billing, is not part of the City Edge. That is a separate, very large.
More and more. I thought
dollar.
This was comprehensive. Oh my gosh. You need to go back to the PowerPoint. Where's the auditor? Go back and edit the audit. Audit the PowerPoint.
Yeah, but come on. I mean,
this is the utility.
I don't want to oversimplify some. We're talking about custom programming. You're talking about, is it greater than or less than a given a data field? If it's greater than, you charge this much. If it's less than, you charge that much, right?
We hoped that it would be as simple as greater than or less than. Okay. It's not as simple as that, unfortunately, because
but we do it on the wastewater already, where we take an average and
we do, and we can do it on the water rates, and we can do it on the wastewater rates.
Okay.
Because it's in the programming, it's in the formula. It's just really a what if then statement in the formula.
Okay.
This is a separate fee. It's actually in a separate. It's not a water fee. It's in its own category.
All right.
So
you copy the if statement,
through,
put it on a different field,
right.
Boom.
Again, I'm not a programmer, but we talked with the people who work with the system, and they just said that that is a custom programming, and it can be done. Anything can be done with time and money.
So no, what we
I think it's probably more of a
council,
formatting, maybe programming.
We don't need the council to worry about. We'll get it done.
We'll figure
we
it out.
We need a philosophy. Is would you rather have continue where you have a flat fee, a consistent fee for all utility accounts, or are you interested in looking at a differential fee, either based on non-residential or residential usage, or based on water use? And then the question becomes, once we divide the 3,000-gallon users, what do you do with those that are not a water customer but are a utility customer still getting billed? Do they get the benefit of the lower water user?
Well, why are we using water as the gate? Water usage gauge. This is stormwater. This is water from the heavens.
We were asked to come up. We were asked to come up with some options.
Right.
If there's some other options about how to differentiate this fee, we can. It's hard to understand or to at least put in a formula what is the impact of federal mandates across the city. I don't know that. How do you? Do you benefit more or less? And we've talked about it's not just stormwater, it's air, it's
asbestos.
So preponderance, the largest portion is probably in stormwater.
Yes.
Is that fair to say? Right. Now, the calculations of impervious cover and all that, it gets pretty complicated.
No, the reason why we're trying to go to a rate is not to try and have a limited impact on those people who use less, which we assume. Maybe your smaller household, your fixed income, those kind of people. Isn't
right.
that really what we're trying to do? The single person. And that's the best way we have to define that. We really don't have any other good way to define
right.
that. And so we're looking for the best way we can to try and perhaps signal that. Because the reality is everybody deals with stormwater the same because it falls from the sky and it falls in the city. Everyone deals with the effect of air pollution is basically the same on all of us. But if we try to create some sort of fair system that we're not overly burdening those who are in the lower income or fixed income type thing, I think that's what you're trying to, right? Okay.
Mayor, if I may, let me point out a couple of issues with trying to tie this to water usage and specifically to the water bill. One of the most glaring is that there is a significant portion of the city of Mesa that is served by the Arizona Water Company. So you potentially miss those customers. So again, you begin missing customers who are customers of the utility, who are citizens, but they are not water customers.
Well, but they're going to be
trash.
They're
going to
be a solid waste customer.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah,
they're
yeah.
Billed.
So the idea.
So if it's tied to a utility bill, it works. If it's tied to a water bill, it doesn't work as well.
Well,
what I'm saying.
Not, I think we're finding out that there is absolutely no solution that's anywhere near a perfect solution. And I think I'd be more tend to say, listen, if you use less than 3,000 gallons, here's the rate. Everybody else plays another rate, whether you're...
Now, we can do that. Just remember, by doing that, without even adding more dollars to this, those folks will get a rate increase.
No, we understand that.
Okay. So
those folks meaning which folks?
Everybody above the 3,000
yeah.
using. So they have that their impact to their bill will not only be whatever adjustment we use, whether it's have the option if you're using less than 3,000 you're going to see a reduction from $3 to $2 a month, and it appears that everyone else will be paying $3.25, and that's before the discussion about adding another dollar. So effectively some of those individuals could see a $1.25 increase.
Or we could say that stormwater is everybody's problem equally, and let's just go with a flat fee across the board.
Right.
Why don't you come back with your, before we get into that, because we need to see how much it is, why don't you come back with the examples of what it really would produce, the changes that we could really see, and then we can figure out whether it's a dollar feel comfortable or something less, then we can decide on how to split it. Councilmember Higgins.
And could we actually see what it would cost to fully fund these environmental mandates? I mean, that's what I'd like.
$2.37.
$2.38.
Additional, fully funds everything.
Yeah, that'd be.
So now you just have to figure out how we can bill it, right?
No, we can bill that. That we can bill it at a flat fee. That's not a problem.
Right.
If you want to create a
sliding scale,
then we'll figure that out. We'll figure it out.
That's what he's saying.
I know you can. I know you can.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Let's start with the total fee first, and then let's talk about how we want to do it. Because I think we jumped ahead by getting into these detailed.
Okay. We can do that.
We've confused the issue even further. Okay. Does that make sense to everyone?
Usually right. We just charge our Magma gas customers the whole thing.
Yeah. Ooh. Okay. All right. Next item on the agenda is. Hear a presentation, discuss, provide direction on the police department's opportunity to request 2011 community-oriented policing services. I'm assuming is this going to be a short presentation or a long?
Short.
Okay,
yeah.
Let's take care of it.
I think
let's wrap it up.
We're going to make this pretty simple, I think. I don't know if it's simple.
Yeah, she's hanging that end up. Mm-hmm. We're going to do PowerPoint first.
Yeah, just one turn.
Wait, you didn't see my evil face.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor, Council. We have an opportunity, the police department, through the federal government, to use some federal dollars to hire some additional police officers. There's a 2011 community-oriented policing cops hiring grant that we are looking into. What we're here today is to discuss and provide direction on the direction on how you would like us to proceed on the department's opportunity to request 2011. COP hiring grant funds. Just as a basic overview, our sworn staffing levels in 2008-2009 were at 857 sworn officers. Today in the 2011-2012, our authorized and funded positions are 777. So we're down about 80 positions that were funded and hired. The COPS hiring grant, what we would do is request an additional 25 officer positions. The focus would be on enhanced community policing efforts. The grant provides 100% funding for entry-level salaries and benefits for 3 years for newly hired officers that work in this community-oriented policing fields. At the conclusion of the federal funding, grantees must retain all sworn officer positions awarded under the grant for 1 year. The application date is May 25 of this year, and that's why we're here today. There's about $200 million available nationwide, apparently, for these opportunities. The Mesa Police Department has received grant funding in the past. We have a robust relationship with the federal government because we've been true to our word, and all of our audits have always come back very positive. The enhanced community policing projects would be patrol, gang intervention and prevention, neighborhood intervention and enforcement, domestic violence intervention, our school resource officer program, and the MESA program, the Making Every Student Accountable program. I'm going to let the money people talk about money.
Okay. Hello. The next slide you see is what we do is a full cost estimate of what would it truly cost to bring on 25 new officers. And the grant money that would be associated with reimbursing those officers. What we did is if we looked at getting an award date of October 1st, we'd like to start the hiring process right away. That takes about 4 months. And then we'd like to start the academy shortly thereafter. And the academy is about 10 months. So what we did on this slide is we tried to estimate what the cost could be in next fiscal year. Now, that is all contingent on when we get the award and when we move forward with hiring those entry-level officers. And then the next few years, you can see that we actually have grant reimbursements for up to 3 years. And then the final year of 14-15, you'll see a larger amount there. And that's because if we hire the officers the first 5 months of 11-12, we're actually going to have to take the last 5 months off of 14-15. So that's why you see an additional spike in that last year. And then finally in 15-16, we'll have to cover the full amount at about $3.2 million.
Just on the back side of this presentation,
Chief,
I want to talk
Chief,
about...
Councilmember Higgins.
I'm sorry, Councilmember Higgins.
Yeah, excuse me. You gave us a sheet, and which numbers do you want us to look at?
We started with the full cost, what's on your presentation.
Okay.
And we also have an alternative, because what we've been doing since we've had this opportunity is we've been talking a little bit about what we can do programmatically. And the attachment that you have there is an alternative that Assistant Chief Mason would like to review.
Okay, I thought maybe it was just like updates to numbers. No, it's different. Okay,
right.
Thanks.
The slide that you have in the actual presentation is a full cost. That includes supervision. It includes vehicles for the 25 officers. So that's kind of your full cost scenario. What we did, and we weren't able to put it into the presentation, that's why we gave it to you as a handout, is looked at realistically. We would be able to absorb the 25 without having to have supervisors. One of our plans is to have more bike units, so we wouldn't need so many vehicles. So this handout is really a realistic look at how it would look operationally and fiscally with what we plan to do.
The other issue that's before us, and we're all keenly aware of the pay reduction that the officers incurred over the last couple of years, and plus the merit increases have been frozen now for going into its second year. That, on top of this, ends up, and I'll just talk about it real quickly, the 2%, to reinstate the 2% department-wide is $1.95 million. And the to reinstate STEP is another $919,000 for year 11-12. So what this really could be in the first year is almost a $4 million swing. The concerns that Chief Mays and I have for the department is that if we hire more officers and use this grant funding, with the money that is coming out of the city, it could impede the ability to actually reinstate merits and also to bring back the 2%. So we just wanted you to have a full picture and look for your advice and how you'd like us to proceed. But if we think that revenues are not going to increase and there's not going to be additional funding for the police department to cover these additional expenses, both Chief Mays and I are concerned about having a larger department that may not be as well compensated as continuing with the numbers that we have now forward and trying to get those compensations back for the men and women here.
Let me ask you a question as far as the last grant we got where we added 25, right?
Yep.
When does that, I'm sorry, Chuck? When is that, hey, why don't you come up here? Because when does that, we're now in the third year of that or second year of
this
that?
The second year of this.
So when is the full cost or when do those full costs start kicking
It'll
in?
Be a cash flow thing again with Pam. She's probably got that. But in 14-15, I believe we've bared the full cost.
Okay,
and if I remember, it's about $2.5 million and I'm just going from memory. So it's about 2.5 memory.
That would make sense compared, considering what you've got here as part of your full cost. So if we added that in 14-15, then the added burden would be about $3.7 million. The 2.5 plus
right.
The almost $1.2 million. So we're talking about $3.7 million in 14-15, but would have 50 police officers.
Well, yes. With
additional, because those 25 are included in the
777.
Remember, there was no 25 additional.
I know, we maintained.
Yes.
Right, okay.
So that's what I'm saying. Those are included in the 777.
Correct.
But basically, we got funded, and whether we retained or we added, those 25 are being funded by COPS, and the full cost of those are going to be, are being covered now by the federal government. They're going to shift back to the city
Correct.
In 14-15.
Correct.
So whether the bodies are any different, the costs definitely are shifted out and will come back in 14-15.
Right.
So you still have 50 positions if we get this full thing. That'll be funded partially or fully by, or I guess nothing's fully, but partially
yeah.
by federal government, just to what extent. And in 14-15, if that hits 2.5 and 1.2, that means we've got a $3.7 million transfer back, or we're going to have to start picking up the tab at that time. Is that factored into your...
just the one, the first
the
number.
First is. One is.
The first one's in the forecast.
First one is.
But the second, this is not.
Okay, so really, forget about that, because in the budgets you're talking about, Chief and Pam, you're talking about, even with that, you're factoring in the fact we're going to have 2.5 in 14-15. Yes. We're going to have to pick up from the first group of cops, from the first cops grant.
Yes, sir.
Okay, so that one we're going to say, let's put that to the side, because we're already going to, we already figured out a way
that's
to
in our plan.
Care of that.
That's in our forecast.
This is not in our forecast.
It's not.
Okay.
And that's just, Mayor and Council, it's our dilemma. We're torn between, you know, not knowing in the next 3 years, does our economic position recover enough that we would otherwise...
It's the same, process we went through 2 years ago.
Yeah, we would hire back, we'd hire 25. If we think that in the next 3 years, we'd be hiring 25 officers regardless, then yeah, we should do this.
Right.
But, and the chief and, he, and the chief and John, Chief Mesa brought this up, their biggest concern when they saw these numbers was... Well, wait a minute, what if it comes down to we hire these officers, but because of that expense and of having to pay for that over the next 3 years, it continues to delay or defer the opportunity to restore back pay and pay for step pay?
Well, I think the realistic thing is, though, if we're waiting 3 years from now about trying to restore pay, we're looking at a much
We're going to look at this in our we're going to plug it into our forecast, yeah. And so it'll have an immediate effect on what we're looking at.
Right. Councilman Richens, and then Councilman Fenter.
So it's not really a conversation about a trade-off between $2.8 million of restoring pay and $2.8 million for 25 new cops 3 years or 4 years from now, because we're not even sure if we have that $2.8 million
well,
yet.
That's fair.
Right? Is that?
That's fair. But we all, but we have to look at, I mean, today, we don't, our priority has been, putting this aside, our priority has been in this budget, and that's why we're working very hard. We talk about revisiting in January the opportunity to at least restore pay, and then maybe looking at restoring step pay eventually. I think those are priorities of the council, and certainly for the city manager's office and the police chief. It's just that, are we better off managing that and making sure that we take care of that those issues with the employees that are here today, but recognizing an opportunity, is this an opportunity to pursue? Now, there is one option. We could go ahead and apply for the grant for the 25. We don't know if we're gonna get all 25. We were pretty good last time. Think we're pretty good too again, but we could apply, and then that'll, and then when do we, well, I'm sorry, when do we get that notice of,
I believe it'll be in October, so
I don't know how much more I'll know in October, but at least we could revisit and decide whether we want to pursue the grant at that time.
Is there typically flexibility in the grants if we're assuming we get all 25 officers, if we decide that we can only take 15? Can we only take 15, or do we have to take the 25 at that point? I mean, when do we have to decide how many officers?
There is some flexibility. It would depend on how many we were awarded. We had those discussions last time because...
Yeah, I vaguely remember.
So there is some flexibility.
Here from that.
I think what we decided last time, though, is if we're going to commit to apply, let's don't play that game. Yeah. There's a far greater demand throughout the country than there are spaces available. And I think we had this discussion more than once before, because we were really torn. If you recall, we were actually going to reduce our request down to 10 officers last time. And we finally decided to go the full 25 with the idea that if we were going to go 25, we were going to live up to that and we were going to take it.
We'll do 25, we'll get maybe...
Well, yeah, we actually thought that they would, the cops would take care of the problem for us.
Yeah,
they would
exactly.
only give us 10, and they gave us 25. But we were fully, we said if we're going to take what we get.
Yes.
And so I think if we go into this, that we probably need to take the same thing, the same posture, that if we're going to ask for 25, we better be willing to take everything up to 25.
And I'll tell you, though, the difference, too, though, way it worked out, is with those 25, we didn't actually have to come up.
Well, that's because they changed
new dollars. Well, they allowed cities, because we're going through the difficult times, to demonstrate that but for the funding, we would have reduced.
We were allowed to maintain, and that was not the original program. No. The original program was they had to be additional officers.
So
they changed the program to allow maintenance, which meant we kept 25
And that's made a big difference. That was a $2 million that 2 years ago.
That was about a $2.8 million swing for us.
So we don't know that that would happen again. We're not going to plan on it. So
what's significant about the number 25? Why are we applying for 25 this time? What again? Is it just because that's what we did last time? It's easy to model the numbers, or is there a
we actually scale, started
economy of scale having that size class?
Councilman Richens, we actually looked at we're looking at some staffing models where we get away from split squads and single supervision and just some coverage issues that we have within the patrol districts themselves. And we originally were looking at a number of about 38 to make that happen. And as we talked through it, we pared it down to 25, thinking that that was something that we on the outside of what we could afford possibly. There is no magic number to it other than the numbers were closer to being realistic than at 38.
I just was curious about the modeling that occurred to get to that number. Okay.
If it weren't an object of numbers and we saw that we believed that we were going to have significant economic recovery, I think the chief would go for the 38. If that were the, you know, we had that potential in here, but I think they try to work it back to something more realistic on the financial side.
Okay. Councilman Fender?
I'm supportive of aggressively looking at this and seeing what we can do. Is it true that we would have a couple of tools at our call to say down the road we start looking a couple of years and things aren't going well? Isn't through attrition, isn't there a way to kind of manage that?
A
question, and
it's
the
a
other
fair question, well, but I think that they you freeze at a certain level. You have to maintain.
You have to maintain.
Is that correct?
That
you have to maintain
correct.
The 777
yes.
council member.
Oh,
they look at that number and say you're going to. That's where you are today. So now you're going to. That becomes an important number. It comes like your baseline, and then they go plus. What are 25?
Those are three.
Or two. That's what you have to maintain.
Okay, thank you. I didn't realize that. The other one would be in the broader scheme of things, the previous discussion that we've had where, you know, if that is successful, we may be freeing up some of the pressure on the general fund from other areas in these in compliance fees and things.
Oh.
So is that potentially a revenue source to be able to look at our public safety areas or?
One of the things we've done in that environmental fee has, as we've looked at those required expenses, we've really gone to try to address those that are being funded by the general fund first. And then, so a lot of what's remaining now, the majority in that previous presentation, are in the streets fund. Now being funded with street sweepers, the storm drain. It'll helps a little bit, that dollar. It doesn't get anywhere close to
minimal.
Those. Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Councilmember Kapanen.
Thank you. I just want to say I support the application for the 25, and particularly if you look at the six areas that you want to direct your priorities for, these really are just key elements of quality of life in our community, and have a tremendous leverage effect with our other public and private partners that we have within the community. So I'm hoping that we go ahead and make the application. I know that you have a very good reputation with the federal government on administering the grants now, and would hope that we would be competitive again. But I think the addition of these officers would be significant for the work that our department will do. Thank you.
Okay. I appreciate your concern about the potential pressures. I think we're going to get pressures no matter what. I'm not sure that this one item, as far as the potential pressure on not being able to restore certain things, I appreciate that. I'm not sure that's really the relevant discussion, because I don't think we'll get to the point where it's this or that. I think that that's a much broader scale issue that this council has to deal with, because it affects not only police officers, it affects all of our city employees. And what we've talked about is that we if we're going to get a solution, we're going to look for a system-wide or city-wide solution, because I think we don't want to handle pockets of employees differently. And so I'm hoping that we come up with with some economic recovery and some increased tax collections. Hey, last month we actually saw a little
3.4%
bump, which was really good. That's 3.4% is that translates into quite a few dollars. We have a few more months of those, and then maybe the restoration becomes a moot point because we're able to apply that citywide. So I don't know that I don't know that I personally am afraid of that, because I think we'll figure out a solution to that. I like the idea of taking advantage of this opportunity if we have it. I think that it does in many ways sort of stop the attrition, which puts us as a community in peril. When you have that size of a reduction in your police force, you can arguably say we're not as safe today as we were before. I think the crime statistics indicate we're doing a pretty dang good job with what we have, but how long can we maintain that? We have to be nimble. We have to be able to respond to change in the community. We may not be so lucky a year from now or 2 years from now to say, gee, we can get by on 777. So I would support the application, and I think we should be being as aggressive as we can in the application. I think we've figured out, and this is the difference between 2 years ago. 2 years ago, we didn't know. We were just implementing all of our budgetary programs and management, and a lot of the systems were just being put in place, and we didn't really know how they would work out. I think now we have a lot more confidence in our ability to manage our budget because we've had success. We're not perfect, but I think I feel more comfortable now than I did even 2 years ago. When 2 years ago, it was really me a roll of the dice, because I just didn't know how we were going to be able to do it. And staff's done an incredible job of really adjusting and adapting to the new reality. So I feel confident that if we take this potential burden on 3 years from now, that we will be able to manage through it.
We're glad you have so much confidence in staff, but you scare us to death. But
no. I'm on a roll here, Chris. Let me keep going, okay? Come on. Just take it in. So I would support the application.
We'll call the question.
Do we have any problems with going ahead with the application? I see nods up and down.
Real perfectly comfortable yet. That's just me, though. I just not convinced that it's...
Well, we still have time. We can make the application. We don't have to make the final determination.
Till October.
Yeah.
So let us... let's just put it out there. Let's go ahead and... Because we have put it on the agenda for Monday, correct?
Yes, sir.
For the 16th, for the deadline's the 20th.
And I think that, by the end of summer, we'll have a much better feel for how we're going, whether this sales tax increase is a blip, or if we actually are seeing a little bit of improvement. I think we'll have a much different feel than we do today. Even.
And I just want to feel a comfort level that I'll be able to restore everybody's existing pay and first before I feel comfortable enough to help this go forward.
Because that's
been my priority from the day that we cut it. And I mean, we need more cops on the street. We need more support. I mean, everybody loves cops, but we have to take care of all of our employees too. And so that's my big concern about this one going.
And
forward.
I agree with you on that. I guess I'm being optimistic, thinking that we'll be able to take care of that.
And not your rosy attitude. That's good.
I'm hoping that it won't be a choice of this or that. I think that we'll be able to handle those two separately. So I agree with you 100%, though. Vice Mayor, you got something?
I just was going to support Dave on that. My concern is that the potential to have 25 officers that we're going to train, that if things don't improve, may end up at a very low step rate for a period of time. We're going to end up having those guys peeled away by other departments, or even federal agencies will pay them more. So I have a concern about how their pay is going to progress as their experience level builds. But that's something we have to...
Yeah, you know what? I'll tell you the experience, though, is City of Phoenix opened up 42 positions, had 4,000 applications. We opened up 9-10 positions, and we had how many applications?
2,000.
Finding qualified individuals in this area has not been a problem these days.
Well, I'd be cautious about that. I mean, that's a sign of the economy. We have 2,000 people applying for police officers today. It 5 years ago, in 2006, when we were at the top of the economy, you couldn't find enough qualified police officers.
I think we were still filling positions.
Filling positions, but it was harder back in 2006 to get. I mean, just because somebody puts in an application to be a police officer doesn't mean they're qualified to be a police officer.
I think one of the things we have going for us is that we recognize as the best police department in the entire state, and therefore I don't think that's a problem because we'll continue to be the best police department in the state, entire state.
Well, Mr. Mayor and Council, just to dovetail off of that comment, just the conversation that just happened here, I think, speaks volumes of the council's support for the police department and your belief in our abilities to manage our resources and assets. And for that, I thank you very much. And I just wish that the other 1,200 men and women of this department could have sat and listened to this conversation because the support is very much appreciated. Thank you.
Thank you.
We trust you because we sick the auditor on you every month.
Okay. Very quickly, in front of you have the IMESA Steering Committee. Now, these are made up, as you, if you recall, by recommendations from each of the council members and then from me also. I have recommended Mr. Mark Schofield to be the chair of this. For those of you who know Mark, he's been involved in the community for a long time. Very excited to be take part of this process. Very, I believe, well qualified. And I, as I look down the overall quality of the people that have been recommended by the council members, and Councilman Kavanaugh was stating how impressive of a list it is. It's a great start to a program that is actually taking hold, and hopefully we're going to have some results real here real quickly on some things that, that got their impetus and start from IMESA. So we have a motion from the Vice Mayor to approve, a second, Councilman Kavanaugh. Is there any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you very much. Okay, reports on meetings or conferences attended. Do we have any of those? Mr. Brady.
Just a reminder that this Saturday, Vice Mayor will be having a park, what are we calling it, a volunteer park event at Golden Hills Park.
Park build.
Starting very early in the morning. I think we reported as early as 6 a.m. We're expecting to have the ribbon cutting that same day at 2 p.m. Golden Hills Park. So at 7256 East Pueblo. I think that's just, is that north? It's off of
72nd North
Sossaman, north of Southern, I think it is.
Yeah, 72nd North of Southern.
Okay. And really, and then we have our council meeting on May 16th. And really, then Tuesday is really going to be a special day for the city of Mesa. We will be having the grand opening of the Mesa Express Library, something we've been working on for many years. That will be from 3:30 to 5 p.m. And so we invite everybody out to the Power Square Mall off of Power Road and Baseline. So invite everybody to be at that. Thank you.
Ms. Carter, do we have any requests to speak from the audience?
No requests, Mayor.
All right. There's nothing else? I have a motion from Councilmember Higgins, a second from Councilmember Finter to adjourn. All in favor say aye. Oh, we have an executive meeting. I need to turn the page. I will entertain a motion. Once again, you want to amend your motion, Councilmember Higgins? Yes. Councilmember Higgins, amend the motion to enter into executive session. Second from Councilmember Finter. All in favor say aye.
Aye. No.
We're now, the vote is 6-1 with some bozo to the right of me voting no. Okay, and we'll be moving to executive session. We'll take about a 5-10 minute break to get into executive session, and then after that we have a committee meeting afterwards. Okay, so moving to executive session. Thank you.